Please call the case.
Case number SCWC 10-123, State v. Salas, arguing for the petitioner, Joyce Ann Buenaventura, arguing for the respondent, Darian Nagata. Argument on the merits.
Good morning, Ms. San Buenaventura and Ms. Nagata. Are you both ready to proceed today?
Yes, sir.
Okay, in my understanding, Ms. San Buenaventura, you've asked for, to reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal, so the warning light will come on with 10 minutes to go, and Ms. Nagata will give you a warning with 5 minutes to go. Thank you very much. Please proceed.
Thank you, Honor. First off, we would like to thank the court and the justices for appearing in Hilo 2 days earlier. Both Ms. Nagata and myself are very appreciative.
Thank you very much. The court enjoyed having that opportunity.
Thank you. Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. This court has recognized in the past the perils and high probability of convicting an innocent man from eyewitness testimony alone in State versus Cabalba. A pretrial confrontation for identification, which is so impermissibly suggestive and conducive to irreparable misidentification, denies a criminal defendant due process of law. Such is the case that happened here. In this case, there were no physical evidence, no fingerprints, no measuring of footprints, no retrieval of the purported weapon that was used. The sole evidence that convicted Mr. Salas was the eyewitness testimony. This in-court identification of complaining witnesses pointing to the defendant at the defense table, where they testified that they were sure he was the culprit, was the product of a combination of suggestive pre-trial identification that started with a warrantless arrest.
Did it make a difference that who they pointed to? Did that actually play any part in this case?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe it does. And in State versus Henderson, in a New Jersey case, which was cited in Kabagbag, the jury imprints the certainty and the credibility of these complaining witnesses and uses that to weigh against the credibility, again, by the defense witnesses.
Well, now I guess my question is who was the victim in this case? I couldn't figure it out.
True.
I mean, the jury made no finding as to a victim, right? They never were instructed as to specific individuals.
I'm assuming, Your Honor, that the victims in this case were the complaining witnesses. And this court is correct. Nothing was taken. Again, that's one of our issues on appeal, was whether or not a renunciation or abandonment instruction should have been given to the jury, especially in this case where they had abandoned. If they were in fact, in my particular case, Mr. Salas didn't even know what was going on. So if he was, since he was convicted as an accomplice, at the very least, there should have been a renunciation or abandonment instruction to say, for the jury to decide whether or not his sleeping throughout this whole incident, he was so passed out from all that drinking, that even with the commotion of the policeman being over there arresting everybody, they needed to go physically wake him up.
Ms. San Buenaventura, you didn't raise that on your petition for writ of certiorari.
That's correct.
So didn't you waive the question, the giving of jury instructions on the renunciation?
I believe I did raise it in my writ of certiorari.
I see. You dismissed without a plain error analysis of ID and read the error defendant to a plain error analysis for unrequested jury instructions for a charge that was amended.
Okay. I believe on page 10, Your Honor, on my petition application for writ of certiorari, it says, was the court's failure to give a renunciation defense harmless beyond a reasonable doubt? And prior to that, I talked about whether or not, especially under State versus Taylor, whether or not he was entitled to an unrequested jury instruction.
Right.
So yes, Your Honor, I believe I have reason. So in this particular case, Your Honor, the first identification that occurred, the first pretrial confrontation for identification that occurred was when Mr. Ioppa was called local men and set apart because of his constant talking. Officer Kanda, at the time of the pretrial suppression hearing, testified that he was set aside because of his constant talking. Then Mr. Salas was woken up, and because he was drinking, proceeded to urinate in front of the headlights, in front of everybody, in front of the CW. And then he was handcuffed and placed next to Mr. Iopa, apart from everybody else. This is a show up. It's as if the police, by setting these two people aside, were saying, impliedly, to the complaining witnesses, who by before then had vague descriptions that these must be the two people you were talking about.
No, how many police officers were at the scene at the time?
I don't know. My understanding from the number of witness police officers who testified at the suppression hearing, there was at least four. I suspect there were more. Officer Paro, however, said that the reason that they were arrested was not because to keep order, it was because they were under Officer Kanda's instructions to arrest people that fit the description.
Were they out in a remote area at this time? Would you describe this as a remote area and a scene that was at least potentially volatile? And, you know, are we, or should we be in a position to second-guess decisions that might have a officer safety basis for them as well as an investigatory basis?
There was no finding and there was no evidence that this was that remote. In fact, it is not that remote because the Mead brothers and Mr. Desop were able to walk to their home. So it is far enough away that they were, it was close enough that they were able to walk home.
Didn't they get the car drive there?
They drove to Kalole Point because of their camping gear. I'm assuming because of their camping gear and their fishing gear, because later on they drove back to pick it up. But my understanding from reading it, and I'm not, I wasn't the trial attorney, but my understanding was when they were concerned enough to leave, they were quiet enough, and then my understanding was they walked out.
In your papers,
I may be wrong, but that's my understanding. My understanding was they were trying to be as quiet as possible, and they walked out.
In your papers, you said that Officer Kanda said to arrest all the local people,
yes,
males.
Yes.
Are those the exact his exact words or something else?
I am using what Officer Paro had testified to in the in his testimony. And Officer Paro said, when did you start by handcuffing people to get under control? No, sir. It was determined that by the sergeant that was on the scene, Sergeant Kanda, that everyone that matched the description given by the victims would be placed under arrest.
And what was the description? Wasn't it just like local males and...
Exactly. Local males, according to page 21, local males between 5'10 and 6 feet, medium build, approximately 180 pounds.
But your client didn't fit that.
No. All they did was did a mass race-based arrest. And therein lies the problem.
Was that a plural? I'm sorry. Was that a plural, males or male?
They described two males.
Okay.
So that's why they ended up, that's why our position, it was a lack of probable cause, race-based arrest, because they arrested six Polynesian Hawaiian males.
One of the males Caucasian was no shirt, light worn shorts, right? Did your client, was he with no shirt with light worn shorts?
My client had no shirt at that time of the arrest. However, if you look at Officer Kanda's testimony, at the time of the arrest, all of them had no shirts.
And in fact, they had already arrested, I think your client was the last one arrested. They had already arrested five other people, or is that, what's the timing of that?
That's my understanding. My client was the last one arrested because he was still sleeping. He was sleeping throughout all of this commotion.
Actually, your client was wearing dark blue surf shorts, as he testified, or as Detective Amon Wilkins testified, it was black or dark brown, correct? Not light.
Not light. So he did not fit the description at all. And that's why there was really no probable cause to arrest him, Your Honor.
The other party, though, was supposed to be wearing dark shorts, right? One was a light shorts, one was a dark shorts.
The original description was vague. According to Officer Paro, the original description did not even describe clothes. And that's page 22 of their motion to suppress. So therein lies the problem of the first confrontation. Because admittedly, my client drew attention to himself.
So what was, what is, I'm sorry, what is your theory? How is that related to identification? You're challenging identification?
That's correct.
So what's your theory? What are your theories on that?
The theory is by putting him together with Mr. Iopa, who was called. I mean, they were separated, okay, near the only light source. And they were called and separated by the police. Officer Kanda testified to that. But for some reason for their own, they basically did a show, a single suspect show up, which has been widely condemned by State versus Bennett and its predecessor, Manson versus Graywell of the U.S. Supreme Court.
That might go to the motion to suppress, but if the court finds there's reliable information or a reliable basis, and even if it's suggestive, that doesn't mean the identification gets suppressed. So one of your theories is the motion to suppress should have been granted?
That's correct.
What's the basis for the theory on arrest without probable cause? What's your theory on that?
My theory on that, Your Honor, it was plain error for the trial court, for the trial attorney to not move to dismiss and move to suppress on the lack of probable cause. I mean, after all, they arrested six males. My client did not even fit the original description.
You didn't allege that theory at the ICA. You didn't allege plain error, did you?
Yes, I did. And that was one of the ICA's opinion, was that they did not need to reach that theory. Yes, I did, Your Honor. No problem. Page 11 of my opening brief. As part of my failure, as part of the court's error in failing to suppress a pretrial identification, my first one was no probable cause for the warrantless arrest.
My question is, you didn't allege plain error, and you're now alleging that the ICA erred by not conducting a plain error analysis when you didn't raise it.
My understanding, Your Honor, is I believe I did. I don't have it right now, but I am alleging that plain error existed in my application for the certiorari. And I believe the ICA, in its decision, addressed it.
It did address the motion to suppress, yeah.
I think you raised it, but I don't think you raised it as plain error. I think that's what Justice Nakayama is indicating, that perhaps you didn't, but you did raise the issue of no probable cause for warrantless arrest. That's actually the first argument.
Yes, it is. It is my first argument in my own question.
So you're actually saying that the ICA plainly erred by not alleging plain error.
I'm saying, Your Honor, that the...
I mean, not doing a plain error analysis.
Yes, that's correct. I did allege that in my application for writ of certiorari by not doing a plain error analysis. And I believe, and I apologize, that I do not have the...
You have footnote 5. Opinion. Footnote 5 in the ICA opinion says that in your opening brief, you argue that the circuit court erred in failing to suppress the identification because he was improperly arrested at the scene without a warrant. And the court goes on to say, you didn't raise this, and therefore you waive it, in the ICA opinion. So apparently you did raise it before the ICA.
That's my understanding.
So one of the theories is that the identification that followed this arrest without probable cause should have been suppressed because the arrest was without probable cause.
Yes.
Did anyone identify your client at the scene?
Okay. Yes, but only after he was handcuffed and, okay, this is my understanding. My understanding was at the time when they woke him up, he urinated in front of the lights, in front of everybody. Mr. Dessau identified the board shorts, and it was at that time Sergeant Kanda decided to then handcuff and place Mr. Salas, my client, next to Mr. Iopa, away from everybody else. And then Officer Paro, or one of the officers, informed, I don't know if it was before or at the time or when sequentially, the complaining witnesses, the Meade brothers and Mr. Dessau, to stick around, because then they are going to walk them out and then they're going to be asked to identify them. That's why, as Benjamin Meade testified, they stuck around. And that it was at that time that Mr. Lucas Meade, who did not remember identifying anybody at all, but Officer Powers said he did, pointed out that, yes, those two people were the ones in front of our tent. And therein lies the problem. And that's what's pointed out in this court's opinion in Kabak Bagh. It's the co-witness feedback. And yes, there may not have been any collusion between them, but it is common, especially as stated in, as this court has stated in its opinion in Kabak Bagh, which cited Henderson.
So the suggestiveness was that they walked the people out in a line and they were all cuffed, right?
Yes, and the problem in that itself was also suggestive because they left out the culprit. You know, they left out the Caucasian who later on, even Ms. Nagata, during her closing arguments, has said is one of the people who was involved.
You know, who was that? Who was that?
That would be Cameron Wilburn. Okay. It is this.
And in terms of, do the transcripts show what kind of shorts everybody had on that night?
No, that's the problem. Therein lies the problem. One is there hasn't been any evidence, no one even took photographs of the shorts, okay, as to which shorts they are and how similar they are to the others. No one took photographs, no one did any kind of voice recognition because Mr. Dessau, who was hearing John Iopa blabbering because he didn't like the idea of being arrested, and Dessau ID'd him by his voice, whether or not any of the other voices were similar because everyone else was quiet. These two people were called out in front of the complaining witnesses. Lucas Meade had earlier told Officer Perot that he couldn't identify anybody, but all of a sudden he was able to do so.
Can I ask you about Wilburn? So this theory that Wilburn was the one actually holding the bat, not theory, but I guess it was argued to the jury, was that covered in opening statement? In opening statement, did the prosecutor say Wilburn was the one holding the bat? By the way, did the judge read the indictment to the jury?
Yes, I believe the judge
did. Okay, and the indictment says Iopa and Salas had the bat.
Mr. Salas had the bat.
Okay.
Yes.
So at what point, if any, in the trial was the jury told that it wasn't either one of them that had the bat, but it was this guy, Wilburn, who had the bat?
It was, I believe it was during defense case when they were trying to point to the other people. I believe it was when Leighton Young testified, and it was the defense witnesses. And that's what I covered also in my writ of certiorari, application for writ of cert, is that all of a sudden then the charge got changed. All of a sudden he became the accomplice to the person wielding the bat, instead of the person holding the bat, which is what the instead of being a principal, which was the grand jury charge
Counsel, can I ask you, I'm going to go back to the probable cause. When I read the ICA's opinion, I don't think they're saying that you didn't raise probable cause. I think that they're saying that it's waived because it wasn't raised in trial.
That's correct.
When, okay. Just want to make that clear. And it wasn't raised in trial, is that correct?
No, it wasn't. And that was one of my theories on the ineffective assistance of counsel.
Well, what about the ICA's opinion on that? They felt that the record wasn't fully developed enough to allege ineffective assistance, and it needs to go, in order for the charge or the claim to be fleshed out, more facts are needed on remand.
I believe it's more than necessary, Your Honor. We have Officer Parro admitting that there was no need for control. The remote, and I don't know whether or not I can raise it here. I believe if I were a trial attorney, I could raise it in the trial court, that this court can take judicial notice what a remote point is compared to a resident residence. It's not that remote, but that is not part of the record, so I can't bring that up. I believe that, you know, we have the admission of Officer Powell stating that the reason why they arrested these people, and they arrested six people, but Officer Powell admitting that only two people, at that time, they were only looking for two people, and they arrested six. And you could look at the description that he admitted to, that Desan gave them. Lucas Mead couldn't identify anybody. Ben Mead didn't identify anybody, I mean, at the time, or did not give any description. And all they had was Desas. And Desas' description was two males, 5'10 to 6 feet, 180 pounds, not this five, and with short hair or crew cut. And we've got Salas, who's like 5'3", weighs probably 180 pounds, but you know, sideways rather than lengthwise, and with poofy afro-like hair. He doesn't fit the description, and yet they arrested him. They arrested him because of the suggestiveness of how he was placed with Mr. Ioba, who at least one of them had identified by voice.
Did anyone ask for an instruction on eyewitness identification?
No.
You raised Kabagbag,
yes.
So you are you saying that there should have been an eyewitness identification instruction?
Ideally, yes, but I also am cognizant of Kabagbag's holding, which is that it has prospective application. In this particular case, however, it was sorely needed because that's all the evidence there was against Mr. Salas. No physical evidence.
No request was made, though, right?
No request was made. So it would have been a plain error analysis again. There are a number of... I have pointed out substantial error done by the trial counsel for Rule 40 ineffective assistance. Or I was hoping for ineffective assistance, sufficient evidence enough on ineffective assistance so that there could be a reversal for a new trial. I believe the ICA said that it would deny it without prejudice to be fleshed out more. I believe that there is sufficient evidence in the record for such a reversal on that ground. It's clear here. You know, the culmination of taint that started with the non-probable cause arrest of my client, who wasn't even described, that went on with the two, with him being called out, and then the third pretrial identification was the photo lineup, which left out.
If the defense raised the issue that Wilborn was the one with the bat, then by the time that final argument came around and the court instructed the jury, was there any surprise then to the defense? If the defense raised the issue that Wilborn had the bat, then there couldn't have been any surprise to the defense that the court gave an accomplice instruction.
I will admit probably not. That's the reason why they did not object. However, whether or not that was right for them to not object, That, again, that is one of our ineffective assistance of counsel claims. Because obviously from the beginning, they should have moved to dismiss or done something to show at the close of the prosecutor's case to move for an acquittal. I believe they did. They moved for an acquittal on the principal charge, and that was denied.
They got convicted of Rob 2 anyway, didn't they?
My client got convicted of Rob 2. The first, Mr. Yopa got convicted of Rob 1.
You said that was inconsistent. Why is that inconsistent?
It's inconsistent based upon their theory of the case, Your Honor. Their theory of the case, based upon the closing arguments, was they were both accomplices to the guy with the bat.
Was it consistent with evidence? And after all, argument isn't evidence, and the jury is free to come to its own conclusions as to what the evidence showed.
There was evidence that there was a guy with a bat. Okay, I don't believe that there was anybody who disputed that.
Your client, though.
Yes.
Didn't have a bat.
No.
Nobody said he had a bat.
No.
He got convicted of Rob, too. So what's your prejudice here?
The prejudice, Your Honor, is that he was convicted as an accomplice to Rob, too. He wasn't even allowed to, the jury wasn't even instructed that renunciation could be a defense. The jury wasn't even instructed for them to consider the fact that because he slept throughout the entire thing, that he had renounced or abandoned the idea of being an accomplice to whoever was holding the bat.
Ms. San Buenaventura, would you like to leave some time for rebuttal? Or? No, I just want to be sure we didn't cut too far into your time.
Okay,
great. Ms. Nagata.
May it please the Court, Honorable Chief Justice Rechtenwall, Honorable Justices Nakayama, Kobo, McKenna, and Paula. With regard to two of the statements made by the defense in their reply to the application for writ of certiorari, they say that the state chose to indict Cavazales as a bat-wielding suspect. And at no time through the evidence at grand jury testimony, through the trial, the motions to suppress, through the trial, was it ever alleged that Mr. Salas, the petitioner, was the bat-wielding suspect. All evidence came out that there were three main suspects involved. John Iopa, the sleeveless shirt, the more vocal one. Cavazales, the one with the poofy hair, shirtless, shadowboxing, gesturing, posturing. And a third person who none of the complaining witness could identify, that would have been Cameron Wilbur, the lighter or fairer skinned person who was the one wielding the wooden object or wooden bat. So
it was just in the complaint, the indictment that you alleged the bat?
The bat was alleged in the indictment
as
the theory of the robbery in the first degree.
As to Mr. Solomon.
It was to Cavazales and Johnny when the course of committing theft and non-consensual taking of a motor vehicle was armed with a dangerous bat. And it's later alleged, cited as an accomplice theory under 702.221, paren 2, paren C, and 702-222, paren 1. So that is within the indictment.
Ms. Nagata, in the indictment, there are four individuals named as the potential complainants in this case.
Correct.
The question I asked before is, who was the victim in this case? Who did the jury find as the victim in this case?
The jury, what was, the victims are Scott Dissau, Benjamin.
Well, let me ask you this.
The
does the jury instruction, there's nobody named in the instructions to the jury as complainants, as victims.
Correct.
Is that correct?
This is to any person.
What is the case law on that specific issue? This has been addressed by our courts before.
You know, I did not brief that issue. I apologize.
Okay.
As it was
in Correa, it's a 1985 Hawaii AFCAP case, and the argument was that the court reversibly err when it refused to name the alleged victims of the robbery in its instructions to the jury. And the court held, the jury must be instructed as to each count that to find the defendant guilty, and must find that one or more specifically named persons or legal entities were victims of the theft and the force or the threat of the force. Then this court in State versus Cordero said the court has to instruct, in that case, the circuit court generally instructed the verdict but must be unanimous, but it did not instruct the jury that is required unanimously to agree as to the identity of the person against whom the defendant used force. And then we just came up with a case recently. And in this case, they bypass finding unanimity because they don't name anybody. We have no idea who the victim is in this case.
Your Honor, you're correct. It was not part of a jury instruction on naming of any of the victims.
Was there any objection raised to this issue, either in the trial court or at any point?
No, Your Honor, it was not raised within the trial court.
How about on appeal in the ICU?
On appeal, it was never raised as an issue.
Let me just ask you one other thing on that line. In the Cordero case, the state confessed error. That's how fundamental they felt it was. And in this case, the faulty instruction came from your office. You folks requested that. Is that right? It's like state's number 30.
Correct, Your Honor. That was the instruction that was presented, proposed instruction presented by the state, Your Honor.
Did the complaints allege who the victims were?
It within the indictment. We do list the
their four names.
Correct.
So then do you have like a specific unanimity issue then?
There was a general, I believe, unanimity issue
Which
within Hodgett, but no specific one.
And it didn't address person. It talked about, I think, action or something like that. The unanimity instruction that was given.
What are the elements of robbery?
The elements of robbery. As charged robbery in the first degree under 708-840, a person commits the offense of robbery in the first degree in the course of committing theft or non-consensual taking of a motor vehicle, and we go to subsection B. The person is armed with, I'm sorry, subsection B2. The person threatens imminent use. Paren 1 is the person uses force against a person of anyone present with intent to overcome the person's physical resistance or physical power of resistance, or under subsection 2, the person threatens the imminent use of force against a person of anyone present with intent to compel acquiescence to the taking or escaping with the property.
Would this indictment be misleading because it turns out apparently that it was Wilborn who had the bat? And you do allege, I guess, by reference to the HRS number, the accomplice basis for liability. But you only named Kawa Salas and John Iopa. And reading this, you say, was armed with a dangerous instrument, a bat, and threatened the imminent use of force against. And you name several persons, but wouldn't that lead a person to believe that they were, one of them perpetuated the robbery, and if anyone was an accomplice, it was somebody who was helping whoever perpetuated the robbery?
Your Honor, you're right. There are only Cabasalas and John Iopa identified within this indictment because they were the only two that were identified by the complaining witnesses. We did not charge Cameron Wilbur because he was not identified by any witness and that we could charge.
Was he a minor?
No, Your Honor. But the complaining witnesses, none of them were able to, they were all not able to identify him. The ones who placed the bat in Cameron Wilbur's hand are the defendants and their witnesses. And that was the whole theory of the cases. Yes, there were three people. Only two were identified
At the time of the confrontation, there were truck lights that were shining on the people in front of the tent.
Correct.
Part of the defendant's shoot. And only two of them were well illuminated. Was that the problem, and one was not?
What the testimony came out is that there were two
maybe 2 to 3 to 4 feet in front of the two tents, that being the shadow boxer Cava Salas without a shirt and with those shorts that were identified, and John Eoba. They were, for the period of about 15 minutes as described by claiming witnesses, within this 2 to 3 foot in front of them. And at one point, even John Eoba shakes his hands, and that is when he says, which brings me to the renunciation, is he says, why it wouldn't even apply is, at that point, what I remember hearing, and this is from Scott DeSoss's testimony, is, what, you Hawaiian? And that's when I said, oh, yeah, I'm Hawaiian. And then he said, you know, the vocal male is saying, okay, well, then your tent is okay, but I'm coming back for that tent. And with regard to the renunciation argument that Ms. San Buenaventura makes is, in order for it to apply, you have to have renunciation is not voluntary and complete within the meaning of this section if it is motivated in whole or in part by a decision to postpone the criminal conduct until another time or to transfer the victim, transfer the criminal effort to another victim or another but similar objective.
What's your answer regarding the lack of probable cause, assuming that that issue is preserved?
Correct. Your Honor, I would again cite to the ICA opinion that it was never raised on appeal. With regard to lack of probable cause, I think the most important testimony to say that, yes, there is probable cause is there were, I think another question came up is, was Petitioner Salas identified at the scene? Yes, he was. He was identified by Mr. Scott Dessau and Dr. Benjamin Mee. Two police officers, Officer Paro and Sergeant Conda, testified to this identification.
We're talking and about, I think the question is probable, not afterwards. We're talking about the probable cause to arrest them when they arrest everybody. So all, don't they arrest all six? You don't dispute that.
Right. With regard
and there was only a report of two of them that were involved in this, right? Or how many did the police?
They were, six were arrested, but Sergeant Conda says that Cava Salas was identified before he was even handcuffed. And bringing back to what Ms. San Bueno brought up, on page 33 of the October 7, 2009 transcript, what she refers to is that Sergeant Conda says, brother, you gotta get up. He's referring to Cava Salas. So he gets up. And when he gets out, Mr. Ipo is already sitting there, sitting alone. When he gets out of the tent, he says, I gotta take a piss. And we were illuminating the camp with our patrol vehicle. And as soon as he exits the tent, he goes to the first tree, and then in plain view, everyone just starts urinating. And it was during this time that Mr. DeSalle says, I recognize those shorts. And it was shorts that Mr. Salas was wearing. And at that point, he wasn't even handcuffed. So he says he remembers seeing those shorts, looking up at those shorts, and when he's in the tent. So that's how he identified him. And then he was subsequently handcuffed and then sat down next to Mr. Eoba.
And there were already five people arrested, is that true?
Your Honor, I believe at that point, Mr. Eoba was already sitting down, probably in handcuffs, and there were others arrested. I cannot say the exact timing of when the others were arrested. And then there were identifications made while they were sitting down, and Dr. Benjamin Mee testifies when they're walking out, he identifies two of them, one of them being Mr. Salas. So there is, the state's position, there is probable, at that point, he was arrested, or I'm sorry, he was identified, and then he was arrested. Handcuffs were put on him at that point, after Scott Dessau does make identification of him.
But there were five people arrested already, and then they wake them up with the obvious intent of arresting them too. I mean, they weren't satisfied with the five arrests.
Did DeSalle say he recognized the shorts, you said? So that was the basis for the identification? He recognized the shorts?
That was the basis for that identification at that point, yes,
and
sir.
And based on that, they arrested. Yeah, I guess they cuffed him and arrested him, right?
That was part of it, yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And there is testimony throughout the hearings and trial that I believe he was the only one not wearing a shirt, and everyone was in different clothing.
Aside from the identification, was there any other evidence in this case linking the defendants to the crime?
It was identification, and there was no other evidence. What I believe Chief Justice asked, was there was it a remote place? It was.
So this identification was not only the central issue, it was the only issue in this case. Did you think of asking for an instruction on identification?
No, Your Honor. Neither parties requested the instruction, and the court didn't.
Do you think one should have been given? Do you think one should have been given?
Your Honor, I've read the case law that now there needs to be one, but at the time, I don't think it was necessary.
What's your argument in response to the inconsistent verdicts? Seemed like, how do you explain the different Rob 1 for the co-defendant, Rob 2 for Mr. Salas?
Your Honor, I can't explain the jury's decision. With regard to what Mr. Yopa was, he was the more vocal one. With regard to Petitioner Salas, he was the one shadow boxing, posturing, making these gestures, and he did make some statements. I wouldn't be able to respond to.
I wonder if it has something to do with not naming a victim.
That I'm not aware of.
If the indictment says and or, would the jury be able to? Can we say that the jury unanimously agreed on one of the four?
I would say yes, Your Honor. The jury was given a unanimity instruction. The four witnesses did testify in this proceeding.
But we don't know what the jury would have decided, because it didn't say and, it says and or.
Correct.
So we don't know from the record whether or not 12 people agreed on one of these complainants.
Correct.
Can I read you the unanimity instruction that was given? It says the law allows the introduction of evidence for the purpose of showing that there is more than one act upon which proof of an element of an offense may be based. Doesn't have anything to do with the individual.
Do you have any other argument? My colleagues are done.
We asked you, it wasn't fair because we asked you two questions without allowing you to answer.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I interrupt?
No, I'm sorry. No. But so I'm not sure if you want to answer my question, that's fine. You can go on to.
Yours is the and or?
Mine was the and or.
Okay. Yetter, based on the record, with regard to what the jurors had decided, I'm not able to tell you as to which victim
one
was specified in their minds. What was the sentence in this case?
No.
Petitioner Salas was sentenced to a youthful offender 4-year prison term.
Is he in custody?
No, the trial court has allowed him to release on bail.
I didn't hear that last part.
Well, release on bail?
Wasn't it a 5-year sentence?
I'm sorry. It was a youthful
offender 5-year sentence.
I'm sorry. Youthful offender sentence.
And what did you say?
He's released on bail.
Oh, okay.
If I may address, I guess
the I'm sorry. The state's theory was that it was Kaba and John who did the act, right? Committed the robbery.
Correct, Your Honor.
So your opening statement didn't include Wilburn, I take it.
You know, I don't remember, but I don't believe it identified him by name. I believe that it would have said the theory of there were three people there.
one being Cava Salas, who was a shadow boxer, two, the more vocal one with the black shirt, sleeveless shirt, that being Johnny Ojo, and a third person, lighter skin, I'm not sure if I said lighter skin, but wielding the bat. So I don't believe I would have identified him by name as Cameron Wilbur, but identified as a third person.
Okay.
But the indictment doesn't say that Mr. Wilbur or Mr. Salas were the ones carrying the bat. That's not what the indictment says? Just curious.
The indictment reads, on or about the first day of September 2008, in the county and state of Hawaii, Cava Salas and John T. Hiopo, in the course of committing theft and or non-consensual taking of a motor vehicle, was armed with a dangerous instrument, a bat, and threatened imminent use of force against the persons. And it was listed the names who were present. With intent to compel acquiescence to the taking or escaping of the property, thereby committing the offense of robbery in the first degree in violation of section 708-840, subsection 1, subsection B, and or 702-221, paren 2, paren C, and or 702-222, paren 1.
So you know for sure Mr. Wilburn was not charged in this case?
Correct. Mr. Wilburn was not charged because of a lack of identification by the complaining witness.
Not because he was a minor at the time, didn't he?
No. It was just a lack of evidence on behalf of the state, or admissible evidence.
So what was the state's theory for how Mr. Salas aided and abetted a robbery in the first degree?
Sure. Your Honor, it's the state's theory that during the whole confrontation, the three acted in concert, where the vocal male, being the defendant, co-defendant, Johnny Opa, was making these threats, and at one point, I believe Dr. Benjamin Mead also indicated that Cava Salas did make threats. During this whole time, when they were being called FN Hollies, when they were asking for drugs, juice, money, I believe that Cava Salas was the one shadow boxing, posturing. And at one point, I believe Mr. Scott DeSalle says he, while Cava Salas is standing about 2 to 4 feet in front of him, lifts up his foot in a gesture as if to kick. During the whole time, these were two tents side by side, which Scott DeSalle and Benjamin Mead were the main ones looking out of the tent. And at that point, all three were acting in concert with the bat-wielding suspect, who we believe is Cameron Wilbur, in back of these two males, that being Cava Salas, two, three, or four feet in front of the entrance to this tent.
So what about renunciation or the other instructions, the failure to give the instructions that might have alerted the jury to the fact that, assuming the state of affairs were as you described them, the defendants may have changed their intent?
Your Honor, the act was complete. They had come to the tents, demanded these items, and had made these threats verbal and physical. So the act was complete. And secondly, with regard to what the renunciation statute requires, is, as I said, the defendant, Mr. Iopa, says, now, when Scott DeSalle was asked on examination, now, what else, when you said they didn't leave you alone, what else was being said to you after that point? Scott DeSalle answers, after that point, you know, what I do remember hearing saying was, what, you're Hawaiian? And that's when I said, yeah, I'm Hawaiian. And then, you know, the vocal male said, okay, well, your tent is okay, but I'm coming back for that tent. So in actuality, this wouldn't even apply because the renunciation was not voluntary and complete, as a decision to postpone the criminal conduct until another time or to transfer the criminal effort to another victim is present, so it wouldn't even apply. Your Honor, if I could just, I guess, address two things. One point was this a remote area? And in response to what Ms. Sanguina Ventura brought up, is yes. The testimony from the hearings was that the victims had parked at the top of this Cololi Point site, had to walk down 15 minutes to this camping area. Testimony was that there were only two campers that night, I believe, the complaining witnesses group and the other group, which would have come in two truckloads. Their trucks came down through this area. Upon the suspects leaving the complaining witnesses campsite, Benjamin Mee testified that, yeah, basically he grabbed his girlfriend Tina Mukai through the bushes, walked all the way back up to the top. They did get into the car where Scott DeSalle testified that it was about a 5-minute drive back to his home. So it wasn't an area where it's easily accessible and populated. And this was approximately, the incident occurred about 12 o'clock midnight, and they returned, I believe, at about 1 in the morning sometime.
So there was corroboration in the sense that when the police returned to the scene was as described to them by the CWs. There was not an area where there were other people wandering around. There was one distinct group of people who were then encountered in that same area. So in that, and defendant was part of that group. So in that sense, I guess one could argue there was that much corroboration at least. Is that right?
Correct, Your Honor. When they returned to their campsite, packed up the complaining witnesses, packed up their belongings, and there was a other campsite.
So in other words, and as Chief Justice has pointed out, there's corroboration, so, and the number of individuals that was described to them was two that were involved to the police.
I think the number of individuals involved were those were the two main people. There was testimony throughout the hearings that there were other people around. There was even one person walking around, and they heard the breaking of sticks behind their back. I believe it was Dr. Benjamin Mee who testified that there were about five males coming around.
Are you arguing that the police had probable cause to arrest all six local people?
Your Honor, at that point, with regard to Salas, he had probable cause. At that point, yes, I believe it's a remote area. It's secure there. Said there were local people, and they were the only ones there.
So they could arrest all six based upon the information that the police had gotten?
Well, the males. They didn't arrest the females there, yes. And at that point, also...
If there had been 10 males, would that have been okay?
I think for the security, that the ones that were arrested could have possibly been the locals that were described. And with regard to... It wasn't a race-based thing, as the defense point or tries to insinuate. What was testified by Dr. Benjamin Mead, their twin brothers, Dr. Mead and Lucas Mead, is that when they said locals, they made it clear that they meant they weren't tourists.
But did they arrest the Howley guy?
No, they didn't. Sergeant Conda did not arrest.
Was he the only male that wasn't arrested? Is he the only non?
He was the only male that was not arrested. Yes, Your Honor. And so with regard to that, the victims, the two complaining witnesses, the Mead brothers, do say at that point, they're Caucasian. They consider themselves local. They're not tourists. You know, I believe I only have approximately less than 5 minutes, and at this point, with regard to what defense is arguing, is I believe the defense petitioner Salas is trying to elect passions of characterizing this as a race-based arrest and identification, and it's not so. It's the farthest from the truth. Petitioner Salas and his friends targeted these victims. They were the ones who went out and called them effing Howleys. I want this, I want that. And these victims turned out to be outstanding citizens. One who eventually said, yeah, he was Hawaiian, and that's what made them back off. And who was a principal of a middle school. Two Caucasian twins, one of which was a dentist and one of who was a water chemist. And they were able to identify the petitioner.
Can we assume the individuals that weren't involved in this, that were with that group, in other words, can we also assume that they may have been outstanding citizens?
They could have been
They could have been, right? Not, in other words, all six local males, they weren't all involved in this. And the assumption of the police was, we're going to arrest everybody. We're not going to make assumptions that they're outstanding males like the ones who reported the incident.
But I believe that that wasn't, in terms of what they're saying is that they're outstanding citizens. One actually was later described as a voice of reason behind one. So I'm not saying that just because these
that
are local males there. Are
that person was also arrested then?
Yes, Your Honor.
Who was that?
That was Wayne Lathan Young. And he had testified. And it's not based on, well, actually, I believe the case law says you have to look at all the different factors in determining their identification. And I believe one case previously said a nurse has identified. They looked at her background. But regardless of these three complaining witnesses' background, they made that identification. These individuals were in front of them, 2 to 3, 4 feet in front of them, threatening them. They were there talking, shadowboxing. The light was illuminated on them from the truck. So they had ample time to view these suspects. They had ample time through vocal recognition, through visual recognition, to identify these suspects.
Counsel, if that's true, and we're to accept what opposing counsel said, your description did not fit Mr. Salas.
They had described them as local males, and I believe the weight and the, they did say, I believe, Scott Desaw actually indicates that he had described them, the grand jury, the shirtless, odd haircut pulled back longer. So there was description of these local males.
One was, they described as crew cut, and one is short hair or something like that. And Mr. Salas apparently had puffy hair. Now, how does he fit? I mean, I can understand a little discrepancy between 5'7 and 5'9, but hair is usually something people get right. And when I read short and crew cut, and this guy's got apparently puffy hair.
Scott DeSaw says that it was pulled back during the incident. And when he sees them and identifies them later, that it's out and it's poofy. He said it was pulled back.
So
during the time of that, Mr. Salas appears.
It still wouldn't match what the police knew. If the police were going based on the facts they knew, and if there was a description of 5'10", and this person apparently is 5'3",
I'm sorry, I don't know where the record was. 5'3". Your Honor, I guess my time's up, but I would say
you can answer the question, and then you'll have I'll give you a brief opportunity to wrap up.
I didn't have
a question.
I thought you were still answering it. If not, then you may briefly sum up your argument, and
sure.
Then we'll hear from Ms. San Buenaventura.
Sure. Your Honor, it's the state's position that this was a trustworthy and reliable identification, which implicates the petitioner Salas in his part of the robbery of Mr. DeSaw, Mr. Mead, both Ben and Lucas, and Ms. Mukai. The state would just ask the court to affirm the decision of of the jury and the IC at all points. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Negata. Ms. San Buenaventura, your rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor. I just want to point out a couple of things, Your Honor. And that is when Mr. DeSaw was specifically asked.
The red light is still on. I'm sorry. Oh, thank you.
When Mr. DeSalle was specifically asked, and how far from this camping area is your home located? His answer was, not even 5 minutes, so maybe a few miles. So it's remote enough to go fishing in, but it's not far from his home. It's not far from residential areas.
Maybe a few miles? Did you say that? Is that what you said?
Not even 5 minutes, so maybe a few miles from the camping area.
Miles.
And as far as what Benjamin Mead testified to as what he meant by local, what he testified, what's your understanding what local means to you? That means that They were obviously, from the way they're talking, like pigeon. You can tell they're obviously born and raised here, or raised here, or whatever, and probably more Polynesian skin color, like brown. So, and lastly, Your Honor, what I want to point out is, because of the paint and the fixation, the complaining witnesses, I don't believe they're lying. I believe they're doing the best that they can based upon the circumstances.
Was there any evidence as to what kind of shorts Rylan and Cameron were wearing that night?
No. Therein lies the problem. There's no one took photographs of shorts. There's no evidence that Desai even saw anybody else wearing shorts, Your Honor. It was just basically that he fixated on those shorts. And in fact, that's one of the things I wanted to also point out that I disagree with Ms. Nagata on, as to whether or not he was the only one with no shirt on. Officer Kanda testified on page 34 on October 709. The main thing was Mr. Yopa's voice. Was there another male, all males, that were at the campsite that night that also was not wearing a shirt and just had on surf shorts? They basically answered. They basically all were like that. They were all, at question, they were all with no shirt on. Yeah, they started putting clothes on after. So the time when the complaining, so it's not like he was the only one. Okay, he didn't fit the description, and because the three complaining witnesses were fixated on these two because of a series of errors that started with a non-probable cause, warrantless arrest, the walkout, the handcuffed walkout, which didn't include Cameron Wilborn and didn't include Layton Cameron Young, and nor the females, and then the photo lineup the morning after, which did not include Cameron Wilborn and did not include Rylan Acia Torres, the two people who the rest of the witnesses say were the ones involved. These suggestive pretrial confrontation identifications culminated to the point where, by the time Ms. Nagata or the prosecutor's office told investigators, go see whether or not they can pick out Cameron Wilborn, and they showed them a photo lineup like 8 months later. They couldn't even identify him. That is the problem with the taint that has caused, that was created here. And it was because of this series of taint that requested this court reverse the remand.
Who testified that it was Cameron and Ryan, other than Wayne
They all did, I believe. Well, my client didn't testify as to that because he did not know what was going on. But I believe Johnny Opa did. Damien Bentosino did at the time of the trial. At the time of the suppression hearing, it was Layton Young. He was the only one who testified during the suppression hearing. Okay. And Officer Paro and Officer Walkins admitted at the time when he created the photo lineup that he was told that he knew that Rylan Acia Torres and Cameron Wilborn were implicated by all the others, and that he knew that although that they were implicated, they could not retrieve photographs of these people, was his answer.
Because they were juveniles.
One was a juvenile and the other one was not in the system. So
that's why 8 months later they do.
No, the second, I'm sorry, Your Honor. The photo lineup was the next day. Okay, 8 months later, I don't know how they got the photographs. I think at that time it was just Rylan Torres Acia that they finally decided to show the photograph of the photo lineup. I don't know whether or not they actually still got a photo for Cameron Wilborn.
No, I thought they said that somebody, one of them said that he looked familiar.
At the subsequent lineup.
At the subsequent lineup, yeah. But apparently that wasn't enough for them to arrest him.
Very well. Thank you for your arguments to both our attorneys. The court will take this matter under advisement.